And once again, welcome to hour number two of the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. We are live. That's right, December 14th, 2021, here on the Power Hour. And as I promised, we have a gentleman on the line that I'm talking, an attorney extraordinaire that started up the ChildrensHealthDefense.org network. He's looking out for your kids, folks, and he's seen and heard all of the damning evidence and put together a book with the help of his team. The book is called The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. This is a New York Times best-selling book, despite the fact that this book has undergone a ton of censorship. And it's my pleasure to welcome Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to the Power Hour. Welcome, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
And before we went on the air, I was talking about Judy Mikovits and the fact that you contributed a lot to her book. And I know that Mickey Willis and her have been fairly well connected. I just saw Mickey live last weekend, and we had a conversation about her and her husband passing away. And he seems to think the hospital killed her. There's just so much, you know, rumor and speculation. But everything that you put in this book, I'm reading it right now. I got it on Amazon.com. Folks, they haven't censored it yet. It's still available on Amazon, and I'm digging into this thing, and it's a deep read. But when you get through this book, folks, it is so much full of footnotes that I cannot begin to describe how well put together this book is in research. And Mr. Kennedy, this must have taken you a lot of time to put together.
Yeah, I worked on it for I think about 18 months, and the last 6 months, I was doing 12, 13-hour, 14-hour days. There's a lot of work that went into it. And then I had a fact-checking team at CHD that was working almost as hard as I was, that were putting all the footnotes in and double-checking everything. So we haven't not had any factual attacks on the book yet. Nobody has, even though it's 250,000 words, there's 2,200 footnotes in it, thousands and thousands of factual assertions, but they're all sourced and cited. And to date, although a lot of people are condemning the book, nobody has come up with a factual mistake that we've made. I'm sure they will. There should be one or two in there, but so far, they have not been able to attack it from a factual angle.
Yeah, I noticed that. And the thing is that when you talk about the Fauci himself and his involvement in all of what has been going on, these narratives, they keep changing. They keep moving the goalposts. You've been following this thing from day one. And could you take a little bit of time to explain how you came to write this book? What drew you to Fauci? I mean, obviously, you've had a relationship with this man, and you know what he's up to. Could you describe a little bit about the what people can look forward to when they get into the book?
Yeah, I think most people were introduced to Tony Fauci, most Americans, as this kind of steady, avuncular, science-based public servant who had been advising six presidents and was the world's authority on public health response to a pandemic. But I had a very, very different view of Tony Fauci from the outset. I've known him for many, many years. I've seen how he operates. I understand that he does not do public health. He has transformed his agency, the National Institute for Allergic and Infectious Diseases, into an incubator for pharmaceutical products. He essentially has turned that agency into a subsidiary and a sock puppet for the pharmaceutical industry. So he actually develops drugs in his labs. He farms them out for clinical trials to the universities. He pays them hundreds of millions of dollars annually to conduct those trials. He then shares the patents with the universities and the investigators, and then he sells the product to a pharmaceutical company, retains in many cases part of the patent for his agency, distributes patent rights to his favorite deputies who are his loyalists. For example, the Moderna vaccine, he put $2.2 billion of taxpayer money to develop that vaccine. He retained half of the patent rights for his agency, which will collect billions of dollars, which he then controls. He gave patent rights, margin rights, to four of his favorite deputies. So they will collect up to $150,000 a year for life in royalties on those patents. And then he promoted it through the regulatory process. The people who approved it, the committee within FDA that approved it, is almost exclusively staffed by investigators whose livelihood depends on them getting annual grants from Tony Fauci. So he controls every aspect of the process. And what he's done, he does no longer does science just straight, you know, the kind of science that we pay him to do, which is, why are we having these chronic disease epidemics? Why has autism, since you came in 1968, gone from 1 in 10,000 children to 1 in every 34 children? Why are we seeing food allergies explode? Why have children gone from having 6% of children being affected by chronic disease when you came in to 54% today? Why did we go from being the healthiest country in the world when you came in 68 to being 79th behind every industrial nation on the planet in terms of our public health metrics? Why is all this happening? He never answers those questions. What he does is develop new drugs to treat, to monetize the chronic disease epidemics that he has presided over. His record on public health has been catastrophic. He has consistently, as I show in the book, failed upward. And incidentally, his performance on COVID-19 is by far the worst of any health minister on the planet. So we have 4.2% of the world's population in this country. We had 20 to 25% of the COVID deaths. That is not a success story. We have the biggest body count of any nation on the planet.
And now they want to inject our kids with this. This is what really saddens me, and I know it has to sadden you, being the orchestrator of the Children's Health Defense Network.
To give the children this vaccine is criminal. And the reason for that is this. COVID is deadly. It's a very deadly disease if you're over 70. It kills, it has a 5% case fatality record, which means if you actually become infected with COVID and you're over 70, 5% of those people, untreated, by the way, will die. So, you know, if you treat them, which is what we should have been doing, giving them an early treatment with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, Zithromax, antibiotics, anticoagulants, anti-inflammatories, and steroids and other drugs, and vitamin D, and say, if you do that to only 80% of those deaths are avoided. But if you just leave COVID alone like we did under Tony Fauci's regimen, no early treatment, extraordinary, then it is deadly to the older groups. The younger groups, even completely untreated, it is a pretty harmless disease. The Johns Hopkins researchers published a study about 2 months ago in The Lancet, and they were on the impact of COVID among children, and they were unable to find a single healthy American child who died from COVID-19. There were children who died, but they mainly had serious, serious comorbidities, including obesity, diabetes, asthma, and others. The study that came out on the entire German database last week confirmed that essentially children, healthy children, have zero risk, statistically zero risk from this disease. So why would we give them a vaccine? It is a very, very high risk. A recent study from Hong Kong, and you can look up all these studies on Children's Health Defense website, shows that the myocarditis risk in children is one every 2,700 boys. That is enormous. And half the people who get myocarditis historically have been dead within 5 years or required a heart transplant. The neurological injuries are much, much more common. According to Pfizer's clinical trial, 1 in 1,100 girls will get some kind of debilitating neurological disease. And they, you know, in the 1,100 that they tested, Maddie DeGary, a 13-year-old girl from Ohio, is in a wheelchair for life, feeding from a feeding tube. And the statistical data from the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System confirms that this is the deadliest mass vaccination vaccine we've ever seen in this country, in the world. More than half of the people whose deaths have been reported following vaccination over the past 33 years, from billions and billions of vaccines, from the 72 vaccine doses, half of the people have died in the last 20 months for the last 10 months from one vaccine, the COVID vaccine. So we've seen 20,000 reported deaths following vaccination. And prior to that, all the vaccines over 33 years given had only 19,500 deaths reported. So more than half of the deaths ever reported are attributable to this vaccine in 10 years. It's horrific. And we should not be putting those risks on children. There's no reason to do it. People who get vaccinated, and Tony Fauci will admit this, are equally likely to pass on COVID as people who are unvaccinated. So there is absolutely no justification, moral, ethical, scientific, public health, for giving this vaccine to children.
Right. I agree with that, sir. And then on top of that, you have all this data coming out of Israel where 95% of all of their people have been vaccinated, and now you're starting to see the spread of this stuff and the hospitalizations mostly among the vaccinated, which is another reason why when you got 53 people dying of the flu and they can that vaccine, now we turn around and here is another vaccine that Mr. Fauci is making all this money from. Oh, yeah, but we have to push this, and now we have boosters. And I'm just wondering, how many boosters does somebody have to have, given what we know about the declining efficacy rate of these things? How many boosters do we have to give before this madness stops?
Well, that is the question, and you're right. There is now a direct correlation between the level of vaccination in countries across the globe and COVID infection rates and COVID deaths. The most vaccinated country in the world is Gibraltar, and it has the highest rate of COVID deaths. So the COVID death rate in Gibraltar is 2,900 people dead from COVID out of every million population. We're almost as bad in this country. And you see the same thing in Israel and the UK, in Singapore and Ireland. The highest death rates are in Waterford, which is the most vaccinated county. In the United States, the highest COVID rates are in Vermont, which is the most vaccinated state. New England all have astronomical vaccination rates and astronomical COVID rates. Somebody needs to answer this question, but the real question that we ought to be asking and debating is, why is it the nations with the lowest vaccination rates have the lowest death rates? So one of the lowest death rates in the world is Nigeria. Nigeria has 1% of its population vaccinated. It has a death rate of 14 people per million population. So 1/1500th of the death rate in our country. That's something that needs to be explained. And I can tell you one of the pretty good explanations for that that scientists are offering. And that is that Nigeria has the highest malaria burden in the world. 27% of malaria cases on Earth are coming out of Nigeria. So virtually everybody in Nigeria takes hydroxychloroquine once a week. They call it Sunday Sunday because the whole population takes it on Sundays. In addition to that, Nigeria has a very, very heavy burden of river blindness. So large parts of the population are also on ivermectin. And that country, which has virtually no vaccinations, but is using ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine prophylactically, essentially, has never had a pandemic. There was no pandemic in Nigeria, and across to Africa, where hydroxychloroquine is very, very common, you see the same thing. The average death rate in Africa is 168 per million. So that is 1/20th of what we have in our country. We need, and the same thing you see in the fact, there are two provinces in India. One is Uttar Pradesh, which has a population, largest province, a population that is comparable to the United States, 270 million people. They gave, when the COVID deaths began in Uttar Pradesh, they made ivermectin available to all the citizens. And their COVID pandemic disappeared literally overnight. The deaths simply stopped. The hospitals emptied out. A nearby province, Kerala, used the Tony Fauci protocol. Heavy vaccination, they illegalized ivermectin. And that county has essentially the same death rate as the United States or the UK. The countries that vaccinate, the average death rate in Europe is about 1,900 people per million population. So you look at the countries that are not following Fauci's protocol, and their death rate is infinitesimal. And the countries, the more closely they follow Fauci's protocol, the more people die of COVID.
That's sad. And the other thing that the other point you make in the book, which I really paid a lot of attention to in reading the front end of this with what Tony Fauci did regarding downplaying the use of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine here in America. And I just, in my own mind, when I hear about all this remdesivir garbage going on in the hospitals and I have nurses contacting my radio show saying, hey, we know that they're giving remdesivir to these people and it's killing them. They're drowning in their fluids. Their kidneys are shutting down. And basically we were told just let them die. We're going to get $39,000 in Medicare money. Next victim. And I mean, this whole thing looks like a cycle and it looks like the hospitals are in on it. What's your take on that?
Well, remdesivir is Tony Fauci's pet drug. And he had it in a trial for Ebola in Africa until December 2019. So he was trying to push it. It's a chemotherapy drug. He was trying to push it and it kills Ebola in a lab jar, but so does a lot of other poisons. The problem is it also kills virtually everybody who takes it. And in Africa, he had four drugs being tested. The Safety Monitoring Review Board, which is an independent board, stepped in and yanked remdesivir from the study because they said it is too dangerous, it is too deadly to use as a treatment for Ebola victims. So this is Ebola, which kills half the people who get it. And the Safety Monitoring Review Board deemed remdesivir too deadly to give to Ebola victims. 2 months later, Fauci put it in a trial for COVID patients of every age, no matter what their risk was. And the reason he loves that drug is, one, if the profits go to Gilead, which is heavily owned by his partner Gates, but two, it did not compete with vaccines because it's administered IV. So you cannot give it in early treatment. You can only give it when the patient gets into the hospital. Therefore, it does not compete with vaccines, which are given prior as a prophylaxis. The problem with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, from Tony Fauci's point of view, is number one, they're off-patent medication, so they can be made. They're available for 30 cents or 40 cents per pill. And Tony Fauci, should I finish when we come back?
We have just a short break, and I'd like to keep you on just a little bit here so we can finish up. And we'll bring Joseph Meyer in after that to talk about what's going on with our economy. But in the meantime, this book, The Real Anthony Fauci, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is with us, and he'll be joining us a little bit after the break to finish up here. Thank you so much for staying with us here.
But what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Thank you.
31 minutes after the hour of 12 o'clock, Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. We have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The book is The Real Anthony Fauci. And before we went to break, Mr. Kennedy, you were elaborating on a couple of points in the book with regarding hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin.
Yeah, I mean, very, very, very briefly, here's what people need to understand. It was critical. Mission critical for Tony Fauci's vaccine scheme to kill ivermectin hydroxychloroquine. The reason for that is that the federal law requires that prohibits anybody granting an emergency use authorization for a vaccine if there is a existing approved medication, approved for any purpose, that proves effective against the target disease. So hydroxychloroquine has been known to obliterate coronavirus since 2005. Tony Fauci himself funded two of the studies in 2013 and 2014 that shows that hydroxychloroquine absolutely wipes out coronavirus. So he knew from the outset that he had to kill hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin or none of his vaccine schemes were going to come true. And that's why they tried to discredit it as a horse medicine, which is like discrediting antibiotics as a horse medicine. They're given to horses and humans because medicines often work on all mammals. So they're used in many of the human medicines we have are also used for veterinary purposes. It doesn't mean you're eating a horse medicine. It won the Nobel Prize as a human medicine, and it's been given to billions of people annually for decades. So it really was just a propaganda, dishonest, lying, and deadly propaganda scheme, and he should be brought to justice for it.
He should. And if there's one person I know in the forefront that has done enough research to convict him, it's you, sir. We really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man and you got to go. I would love to talk to you further about this, and maybe perchance we'll get to meet at some point in time in the future. And I wish you the best and good health and a lot of success with the book, sir. So far,
thank you very much.
You bet. And you can get this on Amazon.com. And please go to childrenshealthdefense.org for more information. We've been with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Thank you so much for being on the Power Hour.
Thank you.
Thank you. And there you have it, folks. Like I said, The Real Anthony Fauci is a deep dive. If you want to find out the real truth, Mr. Kennedy has just expressed a couple of things that maybe there's a couple of fact check footnotes they might take issue with, but you know how the other side is. The other side just wants to demonize, call it a lie, and they don't bring the data to the table. And the amount of footnotes that I have seen in this book is just unbelievable. So you get a copy of this. You can get it on Amazon.com for one. You might check Barnes & Noble to see if they have it as well. It's called The Real Anthony Fauci. You are not going to be disappointed with this read. In fact, it'll make you mad just reading what this evil man has done to our country and the rest of the world. Now we move on. Joseph Meyer is with us. He is a management and consultant. He has a lot of market and economic predictions. He has the Straight Money Analysis newsletter. And, of course, you know, we've got this mess going on in our economy now, thanks to the Biden administration. So we welcome Joseph Meyer back to the Power Hour. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Dave. Thank you and the Power Hour for having me as a guest. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you, Dave.
You bet. And so anybody that wants to subscribe to the newsletter can go to straightmoneyanalysis.com. There's also a number you can call, 386-677-8642, to subscribe. This information we will make available on the website tomorrow when we upload the programs. What I'm kind of curious about, the reports just came out that wholesale prices have skyrocketed more than they have in decades. And we're in a mess right now. What are some of the challenges our economy is going to face next year if this inflation continues?
Well, firstly, let me say, Dave, we now have two versions of the U.S. economy. One is Wall Street's version and the other is Main Street's. But I think when you talk about the bigger picture, as you and I have discussed previously, we're now suffering from the highest corporate debt in history. We're also suffering from the highest level of consumer debt in history. And lastly, and very importantly, we're also suffering now from the highest national debt in history. So when you talk about the challenges that we're facing in 2022, there are many. But I think when you take a look at inflation and how much things have gone up in the last year, no question we're on the wrong pathway, and I believe things are going to go significantly higher. But if you look at employment costs, they're rising at the fastest pace in 19 years. The cost of doing business and conducting business continues to rise sharply. Key components of the U.S. economy, as I'm sure you'll agree, namely food and energy costs, have risen at the fastest pace since 1991. The cost of health care for the average American now costs on average about $11,000 a year. The cost of health care, food, and shelter for the average American now adds up to about $32,000 a year. So when you look at the top 1% of earners, they total about 1.3 million Americans. They're earning in excess of $500,000 a year. But when you take a look at the wealth disparity, we have no more wealth held, as I'm sure you know, Dave, by 1% of the population than the entire middle class in total. We got home prices now on average $404,000 in America, and the average cost of a new car exceeding $40,000. We also have average monthly rent on an apartment for the average American totaling about $1,100 a month. So we truly have many problems on many fronts, all heading in the wrong direction at the same time, Dave. That's where we are, basically.
Okay, and then on top of that now, we have this Build Back Better nonsense going on, which the CBO just released a report saying that it was going to add $3 trillion to the deficit. And, of course, now, because everybody's relied on the CBO report up to this point in time, now all the Democrats who want this bill to pass, I really think they're going to take that all that money that they're going to get, those trillions of dollars they're going to get, and they're going to funnel it to all of their friends. It's not going to be used for what they say it's going to be used for. And this is going to further the inflation and cause it to skyrocket to the point of recession and stagflation.
Yes, it is.
And so this economic cycle, this is why I'm hoping that Joe Manchin will stick to what he said he's going to do and vote against Build Back Better and shut it off. The thing is that it is going to hurt middle class America. It is not going to hurt the wealthy. The wealthy are wealthy, as you well know, Joe, is because of the fact these people know how to invest and make money. And they've made a lot of it. They made a lot of it. They probably read your newsletter.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. So the U.S. stock market, obviously, it keeps going up, and it keeps going up. Investors, I mean, doesn't this roller coaster end at some point?
Well, I think we're coming to the end of the roller coaster ride, as you know, which has been going on since March of 2009. I think when you put things more importantly in perspective, people lose sight of the fact that the rally in the equity market began in March 2009 at Dow level 6470 and in the S&P approximately 700. So this has been a huge rally. The only one rally we can compare to what we've witnessed in the last 12 years is what we have witnessed in the 1920s. But I think the market's making a very important long-term top. I think the risks are very great. I think the upside potential from these levels is extremely limited. And I think caution is warranted in all these markets, quite frankly, Dave.
So you've seen extensive bear market headed this direction.
I think we're going to get a huge correction sometime in 2022. I think it's going to be surprising as to how fast the market goes down and, more importantly, how far it falls. I think the market will rally into the end of the year. Historically, we get the Santa Claus rally, which is typically the last 7 to 10 trading days in the year, and I think that could commence very shortly. But I think it's an opportunity to raise cash, reduce risk, and move to the sidelines, quite frankly, Dave.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, which is why I did that very thing with mine. Something else, Joseph Meyer, that, you know, I know you're very, very familiar with, and that's all these people go out this year, and there's been a lot of refis in the housing market.
Yes.
People are trying to get lower interest rates, but the problem is, even if you got inflation going on here now, is there a potential for another, and I'm talking about in the near future, next year, prior to the elections, a housing market crash?
I think it's a very good possibility. I think you'll agree when I make the statement housing's become unaffordable for the average American. I think prices have just gone up too fast. Wages have not kept pace. I think if you take a look at what we've witnessed here in 2021, we got wages down, adjusted for inflation. There isn't any way people can keep up with these rising home prices. We're starting to see rental apartments go up and go up very sharply. So we're reaching the point where we're going to see two things, higher interest rates, and we're going to see very slow growth. And I think housing at this point is very overheated, and I think we could see a 15-20% decline in housing in 2022-2023, Dave.
So, and that's, you know, I'm just, what goes up must come down. Here's
yes.
my big fear, from 2007 to about 2019, I spent a majority of my time assisting attorneys in trial consulting and dealing in foreclosure defense, trying to keep
yes.
people in their homes. Obviously, better than 97% of the people that were served with foreclosure notices basically just packed up and moved out.
Yes.
And just left their houses to the bank, creating more of a stagnant economy as well as a shadow inventory, which a lot of that is coming back on the market now. The question I have, if we're faced with another issue of what happened in 2007 and 8, where home prices fell so much that homes were worth less than what was owed on them, do you see another immediate foreclosure crisis? And if you don't, is there one coming at all?
Well, I think there's one coming. The question is, quite honestly, the timing of it. I think you're going to see homes hit the market, and I think you're going to see a reluctance of buyers to step up and pay these prices. Homes has just, quite frankly, Dave, gone up too much in a short period of time. I think when you take a look at the cost of owning a home, it may still make sense for a lot of people to rent. I think we're going to see homes fall in certain parts of the country very sharply. I think the big surprise is be when interest rates start to go up, how fast they go up and how far they go up. I think it's going to be a shock to the economy and also a very severe shock to the housing industry.
What do you think the Fed is going to do about this? I know a lot of people are criticizing the Fed, saying, okay, it's your time to step up now. I mean, can't the Fed just tell the Biden administration, hey, look, we're not going to loan you all this money? No, the Fed obviously makes money and basically enslaves the United States government the way I look at it. The more they borrow, the deeper in debt they are. And you were just talking about that.
Well, I think you also have to put in perspective something, again, you and I talked about in the last show. 25% of all the U.S. currency in circulation has been printed and put into the economy in the last year. So when you talk about how much money the Fed has pumped into the system, they've pumped in a tremendous amount. We're starting to see it work its way through the pipeline, and we're starting to see core inflation go up and go up very sharply. Everything we use all across the board is significantly higher than it was a year ago. And I think it's going to continue to go up as we get into 2022 and beyond. I think we're looking at a period, quite frankly, Dave, very similar to the late 1970s and what we witnessed in the 1980s.
Well, that then that was, you know, when the oil prices just, you know, took a dump. The number is 844-769-2944. We have Joseph Meyer with us. He is the author of Straight Money Analysis, and he has a .com website by that same name. You can go there to subscribe. And the number, if you have to ask a question, if you have a question on your mind right now, financial question, I know some of you are really struggling out there. This is your opportunity to get some advice from somebody who's in the know. 844-769-2944. We don't have a whole lot of time left in the show, folks, so you better get on the phone lines and let's engage in a little financial social intercourse here. Gold and silver, Joe, is what the outlook for precious metals. Is that what everybody's saying? Is that this is where to hedge everything?
Well, I think, again, we're going to see a repeat of what we witnessed in the 1970s. I think we're looking at stagflation, which, as you know, is rising inflation, falling output, and rising unemployment. I think as we start to see interest rates go up, we're going to see the equity market and housing fall, and we're going to see gold and silver start a new fresh up leg to the upside to significantly higher prices. So I think this may be the perfect time, if you don't own gold and silver, to certainly become involved in those markets.
Now, as far as the markets go, what about just owning gold and silver as a physical thing, as the precious metal itself?
Well, you want to own the metal and you want to own the high-quality mining shares. I think those are the two best ways to participate in the bull market that's continuing in gold and silver. But I think the surprise again is going to be how far gold and silver goes up in the next year.
No doubt. And see, the other thing that bothers me is one of the very first thing that the guy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with a mental acuity of a two-year-old did when he first took office is cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. I think a majority of Americans, they agree with me. Now, crude oil prices, I mean, these things are not going to stop climbing.
Well, I think we see significantly higher crude oil prices as we get into 2022 and beyond. I don't rule out that we see $100 a barrel oil sometime in 2022, possibly early 2023, or maybe even higher. I think the commodity bull is alive and well, and I think the surprise is going to be how quickly and how far things we use on a daily basis continue to go up. But when you talk about wealth disparity, let me touch upon that for a minute because I think it's a big issue. 10% of Americans, Dave, now control 90% of all the capital income in the country. The bottom 90% collect just 3% of the total income generated from capital. 50% of new income generated since the great financial crisis of 2008 has gone to the wealthiest 1% of all Americans. The richest 3 Americans now collectively have more wealth than the poorest 160 million Americans. Trends in income from 1975 through 2019 show that $50 trillion has been transferred to the financial aristocracy from the bottom 90% of households in the last 45 years. We got a major problem, Dave. No one wants to face it and or address it, but it's not going away.
Yeah, no doubt. And then energy stocks, of course, you know, that ship has sailed, hasn't it?
Well, I think the high-quality dividend-paying energy shares, although they've had a tremendous run, I think they can still go higher. I think they're looking at certainly the markets continuing to use more oil and natural gas. We're going to get a very severe winter, I believe, throughout the majority of the United States. We're going to see unprecedented demands for energy. This is a problem in the short term that's not going to go away. We have to prepare for higher prices.
All right, so this situation as far as people are like, okay, Dave, come on, ask them the big question. Which stocks are good? What can we hold them for long? Do we get in and buy them now and hold them for a little bit and then dump them? I mean, which ones are the good long-term values right now?
Well, I name them in the newsletter, as you know.
I knew we were going to get to that. Straight money analysis is the question. Joe, we've got phone calls coming in. Chad in North Carolina, what's your question for Joseph Meyer?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I've been following the markets kind of, you know, loosely for the last, I don't know, 12 years or so, and this is going to probably sound like a dumb question, but about, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I started a 401k at the company I'm at, and it's probably about the equivalent of what I make in a year, but, you know, I keep hearing a lot of talk about you probably want to get out of the market. What would you do with that if it were you? I mean, I'm
Well, I Not think
sure
you
want to
protect the equity and, more importantly, the capital in the account. If you can move to the cash side of the portfolio that you're currently in and raise some adequate cash, I think that would be a very wise thing to do. I think the upside in the market, as I've said, from these current levels is limited, but I think the downside could be extremely great. So I wouldn't have any problem at this point, as well as the market has done over the last decade and beyond, moving to cash and protecting the equity in the account until we get a more clear picture of exactly what is going to transpire in this economy.
That answer your question, Chad?
Okay, forgive my ignorance. Can you be more specific about what you mean by moving it to the cash?
Moving to a money market fund.
Oh, money market fund. Okay. Yeah, it's a, I don't know if I can move it to a Roth or not, but,
Well, the first thing I do is check with your accountant and find out if there's any tax implications by moving out of the market between now and the end of the year, or would it be more advisable for you to do it in early 2022?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yep, that's what that's what CPAs are for. Chad, thanks so much for calling. Joseph, it's just the craziest time, and I see prices, gas prices, going up and up and up. How high do you think they're going to go in the next year?
Well, I think we're going to see $5 gas in the U.S. We've already seen it in California, but I think we're going to see it in many more states. I think the days, quite frankly, and again, honestly, a cheap energy are long behind us, Dave. We're never going to go back to $2, $3 a gallon gas.
Well, and see, something else that I see here is that every time that one of these variants comes through, it's another excuse to try to lock down the economy. And the last time they did this back in March of 2020, there were no gas lines. People did not go to the gas station. They stayed in their house. Gas prices dropped because nobody was buying it. And obviously, it works inversely. If nobody buys gas, that means they've got all these supplies they've got to do something with. And for Biden to do what he did and go to the reserves and unleash this to temporarily try to curtail prices, I mean, I don't see the point of wasting our valuable reserves. What's your take on that?
Well, I think when you talk about the reserves, they're there for emergency purposes that would border on national security. I think we certainly had adequate oil and gas when the Keystone Pipeline was open. I think the mistake is continuing to keep it closed. We should reopen it.
No doubt. Yeah, I'd like to do that, too. And we've been talking to Joseph Meyer. Sounds like we've lost him there. But again, like I said, we're just about out of time today anyway. And once again, the newsletter is straightmoneyanalysis.com. And you can get a copy of the newsletter, and it's a quarterly newsletter. It's committed to providing an easy and understandable analysis of what's going on in the domestic and international marketplace, defining key elements on the ongoing transformation of the world's economy as a result of the dreaded globalization. It just seems like we're having a very difficult time getting away from this global economy because of the fact that the elitists, which are the folks that you just talked about that own a majority of the wealth, like Elon Musk and Bill Gates and people like that. They've all got an agenda. They all have an agenda, don't they, Joe?
they have an agenda and it don't include you and me.
Yeah, that's sad. All right, so that's why you need to subscribe to StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. We've been talking to Joseph Meyer. Joseph, thanks so much for being on the program. We'll have you back again next month, as usual.
Want to offer a special subscription before you go, Dave?
Okay, a little Christmas present here. Go ahead.
Going to give a full one-year subscription to the newsletter, normally $259.95. At the six-month subscription price, $149.95. And I'm going to include as a bonus the June and September issues of Straight Money Analysis. As you know, I'm working daily on the December 2021 issue, and I'm planning to get it out right around the end of the month. So people will get three newsletters before the end of the year, and they'll receive the balance in 2022. And I'm always available to speak to anyone who has questions personally and directly, Dave.
Yeah, we appreciate that, Joseph. Thanks so much. Dave Prieger with you. The Power Hour has come to an end. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
All heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.